Thanks, Nick. Appreciate you. And Alan, thanks for waving me down. I've been accused of not being able to say my own name in 10 minutes, so the timer helps. Hi, everybody. My name is Henry. I'm an alcoholic. Can you hear me okay? All right,
No problem.
great. All right, before I get carried away, let me tell you a few things that are the most important things about my journey. Through the grace of a loving God, strong sponsorship, continuous service, I've been free of alcohol in any form since August 26, 2011. And for that, I owe you guys and AA my life. I have a sponsor. He's been my sponsor for the last 14 and a half years. And when I went in and out of AA for nearly a decade prior to that, I think I had a new sponsor every night. The minute they told me something I didn't want to hear, I just changed. You know, that's how that worked. And it's strange. I never stayed sober, but something's changed this time. And I'm a member of a home group. It's a Vision for Medellin group in Medellin, Colombia. Hágale pues. If you guys ever find yourselves on a Tuesday night at 6 p.m. in Medellin or Saturday at 9 a.m., look us up. We're a fun bunch. We're an expat group, English-speaking meeting. And we're a little pocket of enthusiasm down there in South America. And wow, a lot of people counting days, a lot of people making their approach, a lot of people separated from alcohol. And what I'm going to venture to do in the time that I have is share with you the only thing I have of any value, right? And that's my experience. Because we can sort of debate or argue with one another about opinions, right? AA has none, but boy, do I have plenty, right? And nobody cares too much about them here. You know, if given the opportunity, I would debate anyone that the best dessert in the world is the chocolate chip cookie. And I believe that if you make the perfect chocolate chip cookie, you need no other dessert, right? And I'm sure plenty of people could debate me about the values of cheesecake and other desserts and so on. But I'll tell you can't change, you can't argue with someone about their own experience. And what's interesting about my relationship to alcohol, as much as I love chocolate chip cookies, now I like to bake them and I try and give them away before I eat them. You know, that's the trick, right? And if I sat here and tried as hard as I couldn't go back in my life and tell you when I had my first chocolate chip cookie. No clue. But I can sit with you here today and tell you in vivid detail, exact technicolor detail, the exact experience when the most powerful and potent cure from the spiritual malady I didn't even know I had came in contact with my soul sickness. The first time I have felt the effect produced by alcohol. Transformational. See, alcohol made me feel so good that the way I would feel without it would never be good enough again. And I'm going to share something only because it was true for me. And when I made my approach here, if you were unfortunate enough to find me by the coffee pot before the meeting, I might try and talk your ear off about the woes of my life. And I'd give you all the reasons about how I'm just the victim of bad breaks and misunderstandings, you know. And I had a long list of reasons why I ended up in AA, but something happens. See, I had my first drink at the age of 12 and my last drink at the age of 33. And in between that time, I would seek out every pill, powder, potion, and lotion to fix my emotions I get my hands on. And when you would ask me what was wrong with me, I couldn't tell you what was wrong with me. I could just tell you that nothing was quite right. Nothing was quite right. And I had a long list of reasons. I had a long list of reasons, but eventually, if you drank it like I drank it, then you know it like I know it. Eventually, that long list of reasons, failed relationships, alcoholic father, bad business partner, the list goes on and on. Eventually, all those reasons to drink were no longer in my life, and they hadn't been in my life for years, and I'm still drinking, right? So what happens when the problems I would have told you were the reason I drank, what happens when all the problems are not in your life anymore? Well, if all the problems are gone and you still got a problem, you got a really big problem. Because the first element of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's like I had to rearrange my entire approach to this thing. So I'll submit to you, if you're making your approach, something that was true, because only true for me, is that the reason I thought I was here, it turned out to be very, very different, very, very different from the reason I was actually here. The reason I thought I was here was very different from the reason I was actually here. And I had to rearrange my entire approach to what was going on. See, if you're looking for an answer, it's helpful to know what the problem is, right? Like that's it's helpful, if you're trying to fix something at home and it's a you need a screwdriver. Well, it may not make sense to pick up a hammer. I mean, you could make it work sometimes, but there might be better tools. And I'm not the brightest light bulb in Las Vegas, but I have some reason to believe I'm not a complete idiot. And this is like something happened to me, 12 years sober. I'm talking to my sponsor, and this is when I realized that, we're told that some of us tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go. Absolutely. See, I thought those were old ideas that I had when I came into AA about drinking. Boy, oh boy, do I have old ideas! And boy, oh boy, do I have old ideas I don't even know I have. Right? Like, if you would ask me, I was unlucky in love. I was ending like the third relationship, and I'm calling my sponsor, and I'm just letting him know how torn up I am, because the thing that all these relationships had in common is that each of my partners, each of the girls, had a cute dog, and I love the dog, and I miss the dog, and I was all broken up about the dog. There was Rebecca with the miniature pincher, love that dog. Lexi had a little Maltese, love that dog. And Andrea had a little Scottish Terrier, love that dog. And my sponsor interrupts me, and he has tolerance to hear my story for about 30 seconds, and then he gets to the point. He goes, "Did it ever occur to you that you don't need to be in a relationship to get a dog?" No, like actually, it didn't occur to me. And then here I am, I'm walking around in the body of a grown adult, and I got blind spots, right? I don't even know that's going on. And so, you learn something new every day, right? And so I had my first drink at the age of 12. And what I'll tell you is the short version is that you could describe me as Newton's first law of motion. An object in motion stays in motion until it comes in contact with a greater force. Now, you might pick up that I don't have a Colombian accent. I was born and raised in a little town outside of Chicago, but Medellin has been home for the last 5 years. And as we speak today, I'm actually on the road visiting my parents, because my stepfather, who's really my father, he's going through some stage 4 lung cancer chemotherapy treatments, and I'm getting to practice the ninth step in a way that's more profound and deep, because I was estranged from my family for over a decade. I denied them a son for a decade. I denied my mother 10 years of Mother's Days, holidays, all of it. And now I'm here to be present in their lives and be useful to the best of my ability. And I'm a little an object in motion, right? I'm a young kid. I had a world. I remember the first time I was in science class, and we learned that the sun was going to burn out and the universe was going to collapse in something like 7 billion years, right? I couldn't sleep for 3 days. Like, how do you eat your Cheerios in the morning when the universe is going to collapse in 7 billion years? What's wrong with you people? Why aren't we all screaming at the top of our lungs? The universe is I'm nuts. Right? I can't go to school. I can't put my shoes on. The universe is gonna break. It's like no, and nobody cared. They all just went about their day. And that's when I discovered I'm just smarter than everybody. That's what it really is. Boy, wouldn't it be nice to be dumb? Wouldn't it be nice to just not care that the universe is gonna blow up in 7 billion years? And so that's me as like an 8-year-old kid. I already got a worldview. I already knew that I was dealt a bad hand, and the cards were stacked against me, baby. And I'm 8 years old. There it is. I'm like a. I used to drink in these like old kind of. I love jazz music because it pulls at my heartstrings. And I was even when I was in my early 20s, my favorite bars were like you'd sit with like 50, 60-year-old middle-aged people, drinking their martinis, whining about the sad life. And I'm like, that's me, man. And I felt that way at 8 years old. That's the way I felt. And I always knew or suspected there was something wrong with me. And my friend Mari says it best. She goes, "I knew there was something wrong with me because my whole life, everybody came up to me and said, there's something seriously wrong with you." Like, okay, eventually you get the point, right? And I was the kid that you went to school with who was getting called down to the principal's office. I'm the kid in therapy they're showing the ink blots to. And I'm the kid that learned something early on. When people are asking you how you're doing and what's wrong, you don't tell them the truth, right? That just gets you more sessions. No. All I see, I don't have to be okay. I just have to convince you I am. Right? There's the game. This is the game, and here's the problem. When you live that way, eventually the avatar or character you present to the world and who and what you are inside, they become so far apart and you get lost in the abyss and you can't separate the true from the false. And that's the way it was. And when I was 12 years old, I would come in contact with powers greater than me that would set me on a different course. And the first one was my old man. I'll give you the short version. He was the hardest drinking guy I ever knew, but he was also my hero. He was a Vietnam War veteran. He did and saw things in that war that no human being should do or see. And we didn't have the systems and the therapies and the treatments to help those individuals come back from that war. And it wasn't like my grandfather, who was a World War II veteran and came back an honored hero. They came back disgraced. And he came back and never quite recovered. And he was a hard drinking guy. And I believe all alcoholics end up in a place that's described in a vision for you. And I think my old man ended up at the end of a long hallway. And on one hand, he saw two doors at the end of this hallway, at the end of his alcoholism. In fact, the first time I ever really related to the big book and brief periods of recovery, followed by even worse relapse, the Four Horsemen, Terror, Bewilderment, Frustration, Despair. These things I saw in my father long before I saw them in myself. And I had this false idea that because I was sort of intellectually vaccinated with watching him become an alcoholic, somehow that knowledge was going to stop me from becoming one. I ain't going to be like him because I saw it happen to him. I won't let it happen to me. And well, I used to say, I'm not going to be like that son of a bitch. And I'll tell you, I am my father's son. I turned out just like him. And so he came over to see me one day and told me he was going away to military training because he was still in the reserves. Except that day, he didn't go away to training. He went home to his little apartment that he was living in because my parents divorced. He sat down in an armchair. He put a gun to his chest and he pulled the trigger. He killed himself. Now, that is one way to quit drinking, right? I don't recommend it. By the way, like spoiler alert, we're all going to quit drinking, right? I just want to be alive when it happens, right? And that's how my father quit drinking. See, the alcoholic who is terrorized by alcoholism, that my condition demands treatment. It's an itch that must be scratched. And it's gonna get me one way or the other. And so that happened, and that would change my life. And the other thing that would happen is for the first time ever, alcohol would come in contact with my spiritual malady. And I remember I was 12 years old and I'm sitting there at this party my sister put on, and they're passing around those red plastic Solo cups, and we had a punch bowl, and all the kids brought what they could bring. Somebody brought some Boone's Farm, right? That's like Screwtop wine before Screwtop wine was Screwtop wine. We had some stuff called Mad Dog 2020. I don't know if they have it in the UK, but like you could put it in your coat pocket and it was shaped like a poison bottle. Like I love that stuff. And then we had, I don't even know if the FDA allows this anymore, but it was called Purple Passion. It was pure grain alcohol and food coloring, man. That stuff would take your eyebrows off, right? It was like in there, right? And I remember they mixed it up and they passed me a cup. Now, here's the thing. Maybe in Alcoholics Anonymous, we don't learn anything. Maybe we just remember what we already know. See, the way I have to live in this earthly plane, I already did in the 9 months I was in my mother's womb. I was reliant on a power greater than me. I was fully taken care of and protected. And when I arrived in this world, anything I ever wanted to be, I already was. And anything I ever needed, I already had. And there was a voice inside of me when that cup was being passed to me, and it said, "You shouldn't be doing this. You know what happened to your father." See, alcoholism doesn't run in my family. It gallops, right? Like we're there. You know, our family tree. Some people talk about the family tree where they had that one weird uncle who. Mine's the opposite. It was all drunks, and there was that one weird uncle who didn't drink, you know? And I took that alcohol and I drank it down, and it went deep down inside of me and wrapped itself around every raw exposed nerve that I had. And see, I knew I shouldn't be doing, but I looked out at those kids at the party and it looked like they had something. And secretly inside, I felt like I was nothing. So maybe if I do what they did, some of their something will rub off on my nothing. And it would transform me. And the effect produced by alcohol did that for me. And if alcohol does that for you, you will let it do just about anything to you. And I took it all the way to the gates of insanity and death. I'll sum up in general I could just tell you my entire drinking career for 21 years. Eventually, things got worse. That's the deal. But I had this awareness. I was making amends to my sister. And I was up in Orlando where she lives. And my sponsor said, "You have to meet her where she is." And Sure enough, my sister's one of these Orlando theme park people. She has all the annual passes, loves Disney World, and they say it's the happiest place on earth. I digress. For me, it might be the most annoying place on earth. Depends on what toddlers you're with, but I have no opinion on Disney World. But I'm going with her because that's where she wants to go. And I'm going to Disney World and I'm looking around, and these people are happy. They're going to the happiest place on earth. See, my happiest place on earth is a walk-in closet, a handle of vodka, and an ounce of cocaine. That's my happiest place on earth, right? Like, leave me alone. And I'm looking around at these people and I'm like, oh my God, I have an abnormal reaction to Disney World. Like, I have an act. Wait a second. I'm not supposed to be responding like this. And that's probably how people look at me when I'm drinking. They're like, oh my God, this guy's crazy. Well, for many years, my drinking in the early days was like going to Disney World. Alcohol did everything for me. I think it saved me from being another teenage statistic, changed my life. But then alcohol, my drinking wasn't so much like going to Disney World. Things got worse, and my drinking was more like a sketchy carnival in a church parking lot. You know, some guy with prison tats and warrants for his arrest, missing a few teeth. You know, I know I shouldn't do it, but put me on the tilt-a-whirl anyway. And we did that game for a while, you know, and then eventually things got worse. And my drinking wasn't even a sketchy carnival in a church parking lot. In the U.S., we have these department stores like Walmart. They might like maybe like Tesco in the U.K. And outside, they used to have these quarter automated little like horses you can get on. And at the end of my drinking, it was like one of those motorized zebras out in front of Walmart rocking back and forth, right? That was my drinking. You know, and at the end of my drinking, if a concerned person came up to me and said, "Kid, are you okay?" See, they unplugged the horse and there was no more juice. And I'm just sitting on a dead horse. And if they asked me if I was okay, I would have looked them dead in the eye and said, "I'm going to Disney World." And where am I going? I'm going nowhere because I'm trying to chase the ghost of parties past. I'm trying to kickstart an effect that's been gone for years. And that's my relationship with alcohol. So, what do I do about it? What do I do? Well, I have to find a sufficient substitute. I have to find something in this existence that lights me up the way alcohol used to. And see, that's the thing. See, a chronic alcoholic like me, I am not someone whose problem is alcohol. If alcohol is my problem, super simple solution, stop drinking. Real simple. But unlike a normal or hard drinker, my problems begin where the alcohol ends. The only reason I ever drank is because I was sober. That's the only reason I ever drank. I don't know how to live sober. I don't know how to live sober. So a chronic alcoholic like me is not someone whose problem is alcohol. A chronic alcoholic like me is someone whose answer or solution is alcohol. So if alcohol is the answer, what in the heck is the question? Well, here's the cool part about AA. See, we have a book, we have a fellowship, we have three sides of the triangle, we have unity, we have recovery, we have service. And everything laid out in AA is like one of my favorite movies as a kid growing up. There was this movie called The Goonies. Right, it's a great movie. It's about these kind of wild kids that go on an adventure and they break into this restaurant that was closed for the summer and they find an old treasure map and they follow the treasure map and they go through ups and they go through downs and they go through twists and they go through turns and at the end they find the treasure. They find the pirate ship with all the treasure. See, that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is. The book and the material is the treasure map. And in the world of the blind,
2 minutes, friend.
Thank you. Our sponsor is someone with one eye, right? He can see a little better than me, right? And the thing with Alcoholics Anonymous is we can only share our experience, our strength, and our hope so that the newcomer may find their own experience. I can point them on the path. I made an admission a long time ago. I can't manage my own life, so I don't try to manage anybody else's. All I can do is give freely of what was given to me. And around December of 2011, I would walk into a doorway at a church in Las Vegas, Nevada. And there was a guy standing there. And I had called central office. I made a mistake. I used to like to go to meetings about 5 minutes late because I didn't have to talk to anybody, right? I could interrupt your meeting, get a cup of coffee, and then look humble by going, "Oh, sorry, I'm late. Sorry, I'm not." I loved that. And then I would leave right before you prayed. It was perfect, right? But the problem is I couldn't stay sober. And so I didn't go to this meeting 5 minutes late. I went 55 minutes early. And you know the kind of freaks and weirdos that are in AA meeting 55 minutes early? They're running around, they're making coffee, they're chain smoking, they're putting up chairs. I go, "What? Two guys over on a bench reading the book together." I'm like, "What is this cult?" You know? And there was a guy that seemed to be their ringleader, and he's standing in the door and he puts his hand out and he goes, "Hey, my name's Bob. How are you?" And I'm not telling you that guy told me anything that people hadn't tried before, but the Buddhists say when the student's ready, the teacher appears. And that man would push me into a series of actions. actions I didn't believe in, but I took anyway, that gave me results I couldn't deny. And the magic part about results you can't deny, they're undeniable. So I'm not special. I'm just one example of AA, that AA works, good or bad. And my experience is everything outlined in this process to uncover, discover, and discard what blocks us from the source and the power. Everything in the transformation is equally and freely available to each and every one of us, provided we take the actions. Thanks for letting me join you, and thanks for listening.